Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Greg Cosell is presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. You can make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online, thgtn.com, or you can call 833-THG-NASH. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, you ready for some real football? I shouldn't say real football, but you ready for regular season football?
Yes, and I know you are as well.
I am.
It's finally here, week one, just around the corner. We'll start with Titans, as always, and we'll move around the league a bit as we get over the next 30 minutes with your analysis of some of the best matchups. Let's start with Miami, though, right out of the gate. Ryan Tannehill is back and healthy. And the last time we saw him, Greg, he went 8-5 as the starter with Adam Gase. He played as well as we've seen him play in the league. What does Gase do to create structure for Tannehill's success?
Well, I think Gase is very good with formations, with the use of personnel to create matchups, and I think that allows Tannehill to play rhythmically. I always felt that Tannehill was not as good the longer he stayed in the pocket, that he had to be a rhythm player, which is true of many, many quarterbacks, but it's particularly true of some more than others. And I think that was evident in the preseason. And again, the preseason doesn't mean a lot as far as scheming and game planning, but they clearly were working on his timing to get the ball out when he hit the back foot and he could deliver the football. And I think that's ultimately where he's at his best. And we'll see if he can pick up where he left off in Adam Gase's offense.
In that regard, maybe not the greatest matchup for the Titans, who are beaten up at pass rusher. I'm very likely to be missing, I think, Derek Morgan and Harold Landry.
Right.
If they can't throw off any timing up front, are they going to have to blitz? Is this the way to beat Tannehill, to force the timing issue?
Well, PK, there's different ways that defensive people think about these kinds of things. If a team is going to be very rhythmic, meaning that you're going to see the three-step game, the quick five-step game, and the ball's going to come out, a lot of teams will take the approach that let's not blitz because we're not going to get there anyway, and then we're sacrificing a player in coverage. Sometimes a better way to play is maybe to play a little more press and disrupt the routes, so you disrupt the timing of the pass game by disrupting the routes. Now, having said that, one thing that Gase is good at is different formations, motions, shifts, things that can then take away the use of press coverage. So that's the chess match at work here. We'll see how it plays out.
Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore, their combination there out of the backfield now. I realize that the ages of the comparison here are different, but do you think Gore and Drake can be similar in ways to how Henry and Lewis would be used here?
Well, Gore at this point in his career is much more of a grinder and a sustainer, and I thought that the last number of years, and we talked about him because it was in your division in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. that he could still run well inside and still get those 3, 4, 5 yards. He was working in Indy behind what would be considered a poor O-line by NFL standards. It's a better O-line in Miami with actually, I think, a chance to be a pretty good O-line. Kenyon Drake certainly gives you more juice. I thought last year Drake showed particularly well down the stretch, showed some make-you-miss ability, showed the ability to be effective in confined space, which I think was a question mark for him coming out of Alabama, where he was not really a true feature back in any sense of the word. So they're different. They can be used similarly, but they're different in the sense that Drake can hit the home run where Gore cannot at this point in his career.
Greg Cosell with us on the Midday 180. I've seen a lot of 11 personnel over the 2 years we've been watching Gase call plays in Miami.
Yep.
How does Mike Gesicki factor into the offensive system now at tight end?
critical. And you can think back to Adam Gase in Denver when he had Julius Thomas, early in Julius Thomas's career. And if you remember, Thomas would often line up as the single receiver to the boundary on the back side of trips, three wide receivers to the field. We call that set a 1-by-3 set as opposed to a 3-by-1 set because the one, of course, is the tight end. And I think Gesicki was drafted for the express purpose of filling that role because he's really more of a big, lanky, long, athletic wide receiver than he is a true tight end. So I think that's one area where you'll certainly see Gesicki be used. I think he'll have to work through all that. There were times in the preseason they used him in that regard, and he struggled a bit. I can remember a play against Baltimore where Tony Jefferson just Velcroed him when they tried a shot in the end zone from the high red zone. But I think ultimately Gesicki is going to fill that role.
Is that a Jayon Brown matchup?
Well, if it's 11 personnel, if it's three wide receivers and the tight end, and they're going to match up man-to-man, it'll be a safety. And it could be either Vaccaro or Byard, because either one can match up to tight ends.
Greg, when Miami had Ndamukong Suh, they had a player who could impact the pass rush from the interior defensive line, and that's where teams will look to drive immediate pressure against Mariota, at least I would expect. With Suh gone, do they have a player in either Godchild or Jordan Phillips who can give them a presence on passing downs from the defensive tackle spot?
Well, they certainly don't have a player who's relentlessly powerful in the way that Suh was. But I think they have a very good D-tackle rotation that has a chance to be good. Godshaw, you remember him, I'm sure, from LSU. He's a really good player, in my opinion. I liked him coming out of LSU. They have Vincent Taylor from Oklahoma State. They have Akeem Spence, who's been in the league. They have Jordan Phillips. They have big guys. Jordan Phillips is really kind of an enigma because he is a big man who's very, very athletic, and his physical traits would seem to indicate that he should be a better player than he is. But they've got four guys you can line up, and they can all be effective. Spence is probably the only guy who theoretically can rush the quarterback. I guess Taylor might fit into that category as well. But, you know, I think that those guys can apply inside pressure at times.
Which leads us to Ben Jones, who was not as good in his second year as he was in his first year here.
I would agree.
And who sometimes in the preseason was getting pushed back in a way that seemed maybe it was interfering with Mariota, you know, not in a direct way, but in at least an indirect way in how it shaped the pocket. What's your assessment of Jones right now as the Titans try to revive the interior offensive line?
Well, yeah, Jones, I thought, had some tough snaps in the preseason. He's not, I don't know what he weighs, but he's not, I think, ideally as big as you would like a center to be. But, you know, I think that's a little bit of a concern. You know, I remember in the preseason spending a lot of time watching Corey Levin, and I thought he's a more athletic guy than Ben Jones, which doesn't have to do with handling a bull rush. But I think that's one area to watch in this game.
Funny you mentioned the weight of Jones, because Vrabel has mentioned over the last month that he feels like Jones is in good shape and is lighter than what he was in Houston when he was with him there.
And keep in mind, everybody has a different view of that. You know, that doesn't mean I'm right and Vrabel's wrong. You know, everybody sees that differently. That's a philosophy as well. You know, Jones came out of Georgia as a four-year starter, and everybody loved him as a college player, but he wasn't necessarily seen as a high-level pro prospect. You know, he was always seen as a technician more than an athlete, and ultimately has to play that way because that's what his game is to be successful. So we'll see. Maybe Vrabel and staff feel that he has a better chance overall to play the way he needs to play at a lighter weight. They certainly know him, Jonathan, better than I do. They're with him every day.
Greg, is it fair to assume that with any quarterback, with running a new system for the first regular season game, an opposing defensive coordinator would want to blitz that quarterback?
I mean, I think theoretically, yes. But I think then you also have to play to how you see your personnel. The Dolphins are a sub-nickel team. They don't play much dime at all. They're right in the middle of the NFL in terms of blitz percentage versus quarterback drop back, so they're neither high percentage nor low percentage. So the question is, how do they feel when they're in their nickel package as to who their blitzers are? You know, this is, to me, this is a fascinating part of the game because through the preseason, the Dolphins' two nickel linebackers were Kiko Alonso and Raekwon McMillan. Now, I watch a lot of tape, guys. You know that. Mm-hmm. I think both those guys are too slow to be nickel linebackers in the NFL, and I think that is an area in which the Titans can attack and exploit, and certainly with Deion Lewis. They drafted Jerome Baker from Ohio State, who's far more explosive a mover. He's almost a safety playing linebacker. He may not be ready to play. They have Stephon Anthony, who's a better athlete as well, but I don't know if he's going to play. So we'll see. But if it's Alonso and McMillan, I think that's an area to exploit.
How about their ends in Quinn and Wake, two pretty effective guys? How much will Kelly be tested here, and how much can you quiet Miami if you handle the ends? Though you gave a better review to the tackles than I anticipated.
Well, I think that, you know, Miami can do a number of things out of their nickel package, because one thing you can also look at is the ability to go with, you know, the NASCAR or cheetah front, as people might call it, with Charles Harris, and they play Wake, Harris, and Quinn together, and then one of them would be inside. So they certainly can do that and really put some athletes out on the field. We'll see. I mean, Quinn, at this point in his career, he's very much just a speed edge rusher. You know, he's never had a ton of moves, and earlier in his career, he could just win with his tremendous flexibility and speed. Can he still do that? That remains to be seen. Wake's just been a great pro. I think Cameron Wake's been a great player. He's older, but he can still play. Harris is a second-year player from Missouri who, to me, is an ascending player. But I think they can rush the quarterback, and I think they'll put some pressure on both Kelly and inside.
Greg, Minkah Fitzpatrick provides Matt Burke with a versatile safety who can line up in a variety of places. How do you envision they'll use Fitzpatrick early on within this defense?
I can only tell you what they did in the preseason. That's the only thing we have to go on. And he played their slot corner position in nickel. He did not play safety in their base. McDonald and Jones were the safeties in their base. Now, could that change? Absolutely. We know that things change when the regular season starts. But in the preseason, Minkah Fitzpatrick was their slot corner who played in 11 personnel. The other thing about them, and I think you can exploit this, is McCain was their left corner. And last year down the stretch, it was Tankersley, the former Clemson corner, who played opposite Xavier Howard. But in the preseason, it was McCain, who's a small corner, who normally has played in the slot in his career. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure where they're going to go week one, but this is what the film showed in the preseason.
There is a line of thinking in Miami that even though it's going to be tough to replace Jarvis Landry's volume of catches, his production can be replaced because he just didn't do enough after he caught the number of passes he hauled in. Do you tend to agree with that? And what are Landry's, what are parts of Landry's game that just cannot be replaced with the personnel they have right now?
Well, there was a toughness to his game, I think, and I think he's the kind of guy that brings a toughness to an offense overall. You know, I think right now they're a little different. I mean, they have Amendola. They still have Kenny Stills. No one knows about Devontae Parker. He's at the point where you have to wonder if he's an NFL player. The player that I find interesting who can give them some juice is Grant. Grant is a player that can give them some juice, and I'm anxious to see how they use him, you know, going forward, because he can be used in a number of different spots, and you can create specific packages for him.
Going around the league for week one with Greg Cosell of NFL Films.
We know all about systems and how teams like their guy in their system for a long time tend to ease guys in if they've come. Surely Khalil Mack, a guy of his talent, can be dropped in 10 days against the Packers. and help make things more complicated for Aaron Rodgers, yes?
Oh, sure. Even if you only play him against 11 personnel, he's going to get meaningful snaps. It's a really good move for this reason. When you think about how you want to play pass defense, here's what Vic Fangio does, okay? What you try to do with pressure is speed up the quarterback. What Vic does with his multiple zone coverage, hybrid zone man concepts is blur the lines in his secondary for the quarterback. So you're slowing down the quarterback. So it's an interesting combination. You're trying to speed up the quarterback with pass rush, which now they certainly can do with Mack, Hakeem Hicks, Leonard Floyd, and at the same time, with your hybrid man zone looks in the secondary, you're slowing him down in his ability to decipher. So I think it's a really good situation for the Chicago Bears defense.
What is the front that he'll play with in Chicago like compared to Oakland, talent-wise?
It's much better because they're a base 3-4, so he'll essentially be an outside linebacker once he settles in their base. But they have Akeem Hicks, who is not a household name for a lot of people, but he is one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL. He is really, really a good player. Eddie Goldman plays in their base. He's another very good interior defender. Leonard Floyd, if he can stay healthy, he has about 12 sacks in 22 games played. He's a very good edge player with great bend and flexibility. So they have a lot of really good players on their defensive front.
Let's go around the AFC South a bit. Let's start with the Texans and Patriots. Houston has played New England quite a bit lately over the last couple of seasons, and it feels like we have more questions about New England than we ever have. What are the biggest questions you're looking to have answered in week one for New England?
Well, the big question for New England to me on offense is their wide receiver core, because I only think they have four, unless they've signed someone today that I haven't seen, I think they only have four wide receivers on their roster right now, and their top three would be Philip Dorsett, Chris Hogan, and Cordarrelle Patterson. So it's a totally different receiving core for Tom Brady. We've seen him go through this throughout his career and be successful, so perhaps they're fine. I think what you'll see, assuming health, is I think you'll see Rex Burkhead split out as a wide receiver. We know James White can do that. So I think you'll see multiple sort of permutations of receivers here, and that's what they'll do.
And we get to see Watson's return. I'm eager to see that. Bengals and Colts, Andrew Luck on full display there. What have you seen from Luck in the preseason that, you know, with the new pieces offensively, you think can give Cincinnati some fits?
Well,
I
think everything's got to be quick. Yeah. I don't think they want Luck to be in a situation. It happens in every game. It just depends on the number of times. I don't think you want to be in too many long yarded situations where he has to drop back against Cincy's nickel front, because I think that nickel front has a chance to be one of the best in the NFL in Cincinnati. And, I think Luck is going to be very conscious of getting the ball out quick so he doesn't get hit a lot. So I think the run game, I think, is really critical for Indianapolis in this game, whether they can somehow sort of stay on schedule, move the chains running the football.
Let's hit an outgoing Colt. John Simon, I understand, may not have been the best fit for their 4-3, but
yeah,
he's a good football player who made a
sure
contribution
is
there on a team that's pretty thin. I'm not so sure the Titans still wouldn't be interested in John Simon after Monday once the contract's not guaranteed week to week anymore. What do you think John Simon could offer the right 3-4 at this stage?
Well, again, I don't know how Mike Vrabel thinks, but John Simon always reminded me of Rob Ninkovich, who obviously Mike Vrabel is familiar with from New England. So I think that, and he did play in Houston, obviously. And
Ohio State, he had him in Ohio State,
there
too.
There you go, that's correct.
And Pease had him in Baltimore.
Right. So I've always liked John Simon as a really valuable role player. I think he's a better pass rusher than people probably think, because he's not an explosive athlete. You don't think of him that way. I think he's a worker. He's a hard-nosed player. He's a relentless player. I think John Simon can help teams that are 3-4 based. you know, he's not going to play in a 4-3 because there's no real spot for him.
Jacksonville on the road against the Giants, and we will see Manning go up against that Jags defense, but it's the Jags offense I'm eager to see perform. What do you think happens at wide receiver? Is Moncrief ready to be the go-to player?
I don't know about that, but I don't think their offense is built on a go-to player per se. I mean, they got to the AFC Championship game, and who was their leading receiver? Lee, he's out, I know, mm-hmm. but I don't think he had more than 55 catches. So I don't think their offense is built that way. I think they're a run-first team. I think they're a schemed passing game. I don't think they think in terms of let's get the ball to this specific guy as a number one. I think it's based on scheme, and I think that's the way they'll continue to play because they have limitations at the quarterback position.
Eagles-Falcons, Thursday night football. Greg, what's one matchup within the matchup that you're looking at between these two teams?
Oh, I'll tell you one thing that's going to be interesting to me is Sidney Jones, who's the second-year player from Washington who missed all of last season, who I really liked coming out. I saw him as an outside corner. He's played in the slot all preseason for Philadelphia, so I'm assuming that's where he'll be. He'll go up against Mohamed Sanu, who's a big physical slot receiver, and Jones is a lanky, smaller guy, maybe 190 pounds and thin when you see him. So that could be an interesting matchup when the Eagles do play man-to-man.
You mentioned that Deion Lewis might be a nice way to go at the Dolphins' nickel linebackers who seem slow if they're the guys you expect. How do you envision the Titans trying to complement that with Derrick Henry? Or would you say this is kind of a Deion Lewis game?
You know what, PK? I can't answer that, and I'm just being honest, because sure. I don't know how they see the two backs sharing the load. You know, you would know better being there. Do they see one guy clearly?
It's week to week, really.
Is that the way they've talked about it?
Yeah, I was going to ask you,
if they were to play the perfect game, how many carries would Henry have and how many carries would Lewis have? So if they see,
I think they can't answer that. I think they would say, who's the opponent?
Well, then from my perspective, I think Lewis is a better matchup in this game than Henry would be.
Because of the matchup on Alonzo.
Yes, because I think you can line up in 11 personnel, which, by the way, is something the Rams did a ton last year when Matt LaFleur was there. So, again, he has different personnel here, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's what he's going to do. He might feel he's better off putting Walker and Jonnu Smith on the field more than three wide. Until they play, we can't answer that. But if they do go with 11 personnel, to me, Deion Lewis is the back that should be on the field.
Interesting. A lot of us are going to sit Derrick Henry based on that, and then we'll come get you some.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been wrong once or twice, yeah. PK, believe me.
Good stuff.
Greg, thank you as always. We look forward to this, and enjoy the regular season. Hey, when does your show air?
Oh, my show airs. It starts this weekend. It's going to be on ESPN2 Saturday. These are Eastern times, okay, guys. ESPN2 Saturday morning at 7:30 a.m. ESPN Sunday early in the morning, 4 a.m. And ESPN 6:30 a.m. Sunday morning. So for you guys, it's going to be a DVR event, but we're excited to get started.
This is what I tell everyone. I tell everyone to set the DVR each week on the first run of NFL matchup on ESPN or ESPN2. Record that show and then watch it around 10 a.m. or whatever time you get home from church prior to kickoff. It is worth checking out for all the big matchups across the league, and Greg is a big reason why. Greg, thank you as always, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Appreciate it, Jonathan. Thanks.
Yep. Greg Cosell. Follow him on Twitter, @GregCosell.